My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Lauren Tucker.
You don't have a black retention problem or a talent problem. It's that the talent now has a problem with you, and they're unwilling to give up the freedom and the independence and at least the consistency of knowing they're in charge of their own destiny to now come to work for these very same places that merely a couple, 3 years ago wouldn't open their doors.
Dr. Lauren Tucker is the founder and CEO of Do What Matters, an inclusion management consultancy that challenges the cultural homogeneity in the advertising and marketing communications industry by designing inclusion solutions that foster greater creativity, innovation, and growth. Frustrated with the lack of progress on diversity, equity, and inclusion in the advertising and marcom industries, Tucker left her position as the chief strategy officer at Merge, one of the nation's largest independent agencies, to promote a different approach to increasing diversity in an industry that is still more than 80% white. My conversation with Dr. Lauren Tucker is coming right up. But first, as you know, this show is literally about being on brand. And one of the best ways to be on brand is strong, consistent design. But that's easier said than done. On one end of the spectrum, you've got agencies who might not be as responsive as you'd like. On the other side of things, you have cheap marketplaces, which are cheap, but, well, cheap. In either scenario, you often end up with confused designers, missed deadlines, never-ending revisions, and countless additional costs. But there's another option you should know about, Superside, your one-stop shop for good design. Superside is a unique design subscription service that combines top designers from around the world with technology made to streamline the process for everyone involved. Your projects get done 20 times faster than in-house teams and 70% faster than agencies. This speed adds up as it can cut design costs up to 50%. With Superside, you can increase production capacity during busy times without increasing headcount. This allows in-house designers to focus on strategic, big-picture design. Plus, you can easily store, share, and collaborate on design files across your team and stakeholders. Superside offers annual subscription plans that include a dedicated design team, single point of contact project managers, same-day turnarounds when needed, and access to Superside's purpose-built technology to make great design production easy. Plus, when listeners of the On Brand podcast sign up for an annual subscription, you get a month free. That's $3,000 worth of design. Choose the right side of design. Superside. Learn more now at bit.ly/SupersideOnBrand. That's bit.ly/SupersideOnBrand. All one word. And now, Lauren Tucker, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
You know, I always, you know, in our little pre-show conversation, I gave you the warning of the closing question of the brand that makes you smile. And as you noted, I left it open for a shaking your head, bad smile. And I don't want to spoil what's coming up, but merely want to reference that I have a, it's not a smile, but it's a shaking my head at an industry that is still 80% white. I think it just sits there like a lump. And as you noted in your own bio, with frustrated with the lack of progress. So I feel like this is anything but a softball, but it's like, in looking at that, what made you decide to take a different approach?
Well, I realized after 30 years in advertising and marketing, you know, you can't be a prophet in your own land. That's the first thing. I left Merge mainly because, you know, you only ring the bell so many times on issues around diversity. And it just got to the point where I was done in terms of my own personal personal journey to try to improve the places where I worked from on the inside. And I think that's really what is challenging to a lot of chief diversity officers these days, is that, again, it's very hard to be a prophet in your own land and go it alone. I think it does require outside counsel to get the momentum going, to break the inertia. So when I decided to start Do What Matters, my team and I just realized, like, you know, I always talk to my clients and I say right from the beginning to just inoculate myself in some ways. I'm straight, no chaser. I will not sacrifice clarity for diplomacy. I've got some great diplomats on my team, thank goodness, but I am not a diplomat. I have learned when I try to be a diplomat, when I try to soft pedal issues, especially around inclusion, equity, and diversity, I do not seem to come off clear. And so now I don't get diplomatic. I tell my clients and I tell potential clients exactly what they need to hear, not necessarily what they want to hear. And the industry, advertising in particular, but I would argue technology as well, you know, the reason why it is hard to move the number at this point is not for lack of intent, but the actions to get to impact have to be different, because you cannot make up for decades and decades of exclusion and bias and now, you know, start looking for people and to start hiring people. And see, that's what diversity first tells these folks. We're inclusion first. But diversity first is telling these folks, well, we got to find more Black people, got to find more people of color, got to find more women. Well, when it comes to people of color in particular, if you've excluded them from exhibiting and exercising their creativity in the advertising space, in the technology space, they will find other places to do that. And so what you're seeing is, and I hate calling it a pipeline issue. It's not a pipeline issue. It's just the fact that those people who have those kinds of creative skills, production skills, writing skills, designing skills, they have gone into other industries. More likely, they've gone into business for themselves. They are freelancers. They are working the gig economy. They're on TikTok gaining followers. They're on Instagram. They've decided to, do YouTube videos. So they are out there. They just, you know, at the end of the day, and I like to say this all the time because it's so true, you don't have a Black retention problem or a talent problem. It's that the talent now has a problem with you. And they're unwilling to give up the freedom and the independence and at least the consistency of knowing they're in charge of their own destiny to now come to work for these very same places that merely a couple, 3 years ago wouldn't open their doors to them, would come up with crap like, well, you know, we don't want to sacrifice our standards or talent for diversity. And that's complete BS, right? But that has been one of the most common comments. I still get it. I still get these comments around standards versus diversity. And you know what? Who wants to work for an organization that continues to have managers that say that ridiculous phrase as if somehow the people that they're quote unquote looking for don't know the reality that, yeah, you know, the standards are ghost rules that keep moving. And there are a whole bunch of people who are white and male in these organizations. Yeah, they aren't all that great either.
And, you know, especially when you look at, I think the other frustrating thing about this problem is exactly what you just said, because it's not only the creative standards kind of the verses used as an excuse, but if you look at it, the industry is one of creativity and innovation. And it's not an either or. It's how to ensure that your organization is going to thrive creatively. And it seems like that must be a real disconnect with some sort of different definition of creativity or maybe something even more deeply rooted.
Well, Nick, here's what I like to say. There's a heck of a lot of badvertising out there. Okay, I call it badvertising. So we know for a fact that, and let me just say, there are a lot of agency leaders that want to blame their clients for the badvertising. I don't think so. You know, there's a lot of badvertising being put on the table. You don't put stuff on the table you don't want clients to buy. So I will say there's a lot of bad advertising out there that tells me that the standards of the industry aren't particularly crystallized. And I typically will, you know, when I get that question or those that statement from clients, you know, I like to say standards are kind of interesting things, because if we look at other industries, you know, let's look at Misty Copeland in ballet. I mean, if you were to look at her body, the standards that a ballerina is judged by and has been judged by for years, the game, she changed the game in terms of athleticism in ballet. Simone Biles changed the game in gymnastics. You know, I look at Russell Wilson. You know, Russell Wilson is a brilliant quarterback who, man, if he's 5'9", 5'10", I mean, I don't think he's 5'10". You know, it used to be that the standards for a good quarterback was that quarterback first was white, was assumed to be smart, but he was typically over six feet tall, so he could see over the line. Well, Russell Wilson comes in, and Russell Wilson really is smart. And I don't mean just smart, you know, because, okay, I admit both he and I are Badgers. He got his master's degree from the University of Wisconsin, where I got my PhD. But he studies the game. He spends hours and hours studying, you know, film of his competitors. He doesn't just rely on something about, you know, being able to see over the line. And it makes him not just a good quarterback, but a really smart quarterback, because he can read what's happening on the field. He's changed the game. He's changed what the standard should be. We can no longer, even white quarterbacks now realize, who are over six feet tall, now realize they can't just depend on being able to see over the line and just their instincts. They have to really study the game. So I use these as examples of what I mean by those standards. You know, we've seen it in a variety of industries where the industries have been transformed because new people come in. You know, we look at Serena Williams or Tiger Woods, they've changed the game. So these standards, it's another myth that I think fear tells itself so that they don't have to make the changes that are required to create products, services, and content that are memorable and meaningful and remarkable to an increasingly multicultural, transcultural, and global world.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show.
So you were talking about this much deeper need, the standards change. And is part of the challenge, I kind of feel like, to me, I said earlier, it should be obvious given that we're so driven by creativity. But is it that historically what advertising has often brought to the table is this idea of papering over a problem? We're gonna advertise it away. We're gonna have more doctors smoke camels than any other cigarette, instead of turning it the other way and using it to address the challenge.
Well, I think, you know, let's be real here. I mean, advertising, of all the creative industries and cultural industries, advertising is the most conservative. And I think the irony there is the business doesn't really want to see itself that way, but it's the most conservative business because it works directly for business. The goal is to create content that will move the dial on the business. And the relationship between agencies and the talent in agencies with clients is one where the power does really exist with clients. At least that's the current model. It is, I think, going to be evolving very quickly, right? But at this point, it's probably one of the most constrained of the culture industries. It's the most conservative. It has a lot of work it has to do. And so as a result, that conservatism seeps into everything that agencies do, including the relationships that employees have with each other, with their bosses. That conservatism means that change is very hard to really achieve and instigate. So it is not one of the leading, I would argue it's not a, it, you know, the business itself is not a groundbreaking business. It is not going to bring in new genres and new things to think about, like the music business or even the movie business, where you have at least, you know, independent films doing different things. Even though, you know, money is money, right? It's really all about money. But I would argue that that's one of the biggest barriers to change, is that advertising is inherently a conservative business. What I do think is changing, which is interesting, is that marketers are starting to, at least smart marketers, are starting to see, and have been for a while, they're being attracted by people who are on, you know, TikTok, influencers, TikTok and Instagram and, you know, Facebook and wherever, where they see really creative people that don't have those constraints doing interesting things, gaining followers, making connections with audiences. And then they, you know, marketers go, I want me some of that. Because now they see evidence of success. So they say, I want me some of that, even if it's different than what they've done in the past. And what we're seeing are agencies, smart creatives, smart creative managers and leaders starting to be better cultural, cultural surveillance, and bringing these opportunities to their clients. The smart ones will, and I think about, you know, two of my favorite agencies are probably, you know, the Martin Agency, which is one of our, you know, Kristen Cavallo is one of our clients, CEO there, and Translation, where I think they're very good at cultural surveillance and understanding that the role of the creative leadership, and Danny Robinson, who's the chief creative officer at the Martin Agency, is just brilliant at this. I call him the Clive Davis of creatives, because he understands that the role is changing for creative leadership at agencies. And it's not so much about making it themselves, but more about identifying those makers that are out there that can bring a diversity of spirit, experience, thought, POV to solving the challenges that clients present to them in interesting and creative ways. But those folks have proven themselves on their own out there. And what people like Danny Robinson do is bring them in and let them do their thing. And then his job is making sure the client understands what is going on, why it's working for the business, and connecting the dots between creativity and the growth that his clients seek.
Well, I think that entire breakdown is really helpful to see in terms of the advertising industry, you know, driven, you know, with the power dynamics on the client seeing more of a need in reflecting that, but then also the role of agency leaders in all of that as well, and working to bring that through. You know, in looking at all of this, there's the challenge that comes with transactional diversity, which we've seen with Walmart and the Juneteenth branded ice cream. Give us your analysis of what happened there and what might be a better path.
Well, this is a clear example of what my team and I like to call diversity theater. And this is where, you know, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we've seen the show before, right? And so it is clearly diversity theater. This is what happens when you put diversity before inclusion. Diversity without inclusion just hurts everyone. And we know, you know, what's always interesting about, you know, my team is that we have been in business. It makes us distinct in that way, in that we don't come out of a traditional diversity space. We don't come at it from necessarily an HR perspective. We have been actually in business. My team, you know, I've got client side folks, people who've worked for many years at McDonald's. We've all had agency experience. I've owned another business. So we have very senior level experiences. So we know that you don't bring something together like, you know, you don't bring something to market like Juneteenth ice cream, you know, in 3 days. Right. You don't wake up one morning and go, you know, I think I'm going to bring some Juneteenth ice cream to the shelves. And then 3 days later, it happens. This was a process that probably was a year in the making, 6 months if it was rapid prototyping. Right. So there were a lot of people, a lot of checkpoints along the way. This is what I mean by it's hard to be a prophet in your own land. They have a chief diversity officer. I'm sure they have employee resource groups. Did any of those people see the plans moving forward? Did somebody raise their hand and get dismissed because of the politics, the internal politics? Were people afraid to raise their hands? This is where inclusion management comes in. Somebody, I would hope, along the way saw this and thought, this is not the greatest idea. The question is whether that person felt safe, valued, and heard enough to raise their hand. If they did raise their hand, how were they treated? Were they dismissed? Were they taken seriously? So if somebody had that kind of empowerment, they probably would have said, this just looks very performative, very transactional. It's not really moving the dial. And here's the other thing that, you know, you talked about brands, and I'm going to, you know, preempt you here. You talk about brands that make me smile in that kind of evil, nefarious way. I look at the situation with Walmart and I think this is just against good, best practices from a marketing standpoint. What that move showed me is that either they ignored competitive analysis, they didn't look at what Target was doing. Target is, you know, a company that is certainly a competitor. They have been really focusing on intention and action and impact, on transformation by empowering people of color, entrepreneurs who of color, and really helping them to gain access to their sales channels, gain access to the shelves, supporting them with marketing support, highlighting their stories. This is what we call transformational. This is inclusion management. This is helping both Target and those entrepreneurs get the win-win. With what Walmart did was not only purely transactional, but here's the thing, at the end of the day, everybody lost. They had to take the products, and it wasn't just the ice cream, it was the wines, right, and I don't know what else they thought was important to Juneteenth, but it showed a lack of good marketing practices. It showed that somehow people didn't understand the audience for these products. They didn't understand the cultural zeitgeist. They didn't understand Juneteenth. They didn't understand what their competitors were doing. And so we often talk about inclusion management. We talk about ourselves as inclusion management consultants. And I say 2/3 of what we do is management consulting, because this was just against all good best practices from a marketing standpoint. But on top of that, I just find it hard to believe, knowing and having, you know, many years ago worked on Walmart when I was at the Martin agency. And I can tell you, nothing, they don't just wake up in the morning and decide to deliver something that afternoon.
Yeah.
So somebody had to have raised their hand and said, or thought about it, and they somehow either were dismissed or didn't get included in the decision making required to have kept that egregious incident from happening.
It's such a great point, especially with a company the size and footprint of Walmart. As we record this here, I should have mentioned this earlier. Not much lead time. We're going to be right here. It's the beginning of June. How can brands commemorate Juneteenth, or should they?
I think they can. I think the question is, what kind of research have you done on it? Walmart is such a huge brand. And I will say this, and I need to say this because it's very important. People will look at it, and I'm sure people inside of Walmart will say, well, Medieval eroded our brand a little bit, but we're a big brand. We'll survive this. So said Montgomery Ward. So said Sears. So said Blockbuster and Borders. And, the history of marketing is littered with big brands we never thought were going to ever fall. And I always wonder, what was the one incident that was really a sign that this was the beginning of the end, right? So, you don't think for a moment that Walmart couldn't find its way, trashed on the side of the road of marketing. But what I think Walmart does have, it does have a big enough brand that it could be supporting the telling of the story of Juneteenth. It could be supporting and sponsoring the education or highlighting the stories of entrepreneurs of African-American entrepreneurs who changed the game, right? Walmart has a big enough brand that it could be supporting the stories of entrepreneurs that are currently contributing to their success, African-American women, LGBTQ. They have the power to highlight inclusion in this country at a time when we need big brands to support and highlight the need for inclusion if we are going to be competitive globally. And so I'm mystified that they have not used the power of their brand to do much more transformative work and to really, in this particular case, they could have sponsored various activities, events. They could have supported a greater recognition of what Juneteenth is all about and how it relates to freedom for all of us in the United States, not just for African Americans. And again, good marketing best practices would have had those ideas on the table. So somehow, they failed to put into place just good marketing and business practices.
That's such a great point about the power that they can have with their size and scope. And I love the idea about telling stories and sharing stories. That seems so powerful, compelling, and transformative, like you said as well. Lauren, you brought up a couple of examples of brands. We could call it there with the shaking your head, laughing smile at Walmart. And I love the example of Target too, just kind of a definite, powerful compare and contrast. Do you have any other brands that make you smile that aren't maybe falling into the trap of diversity theater?
Yeah, I think, I look at brands like Ulta, who are also supporting entrepreneurs of color, knowing full well that the cosmetic industry, you talk about over-indexing in the cosmetic industry, both Latinx and African-American consumers. And so really supporting female entrepreneurs in that space. giving them opportunities to distribute their products, revenue sharing. So Ulta's doing that as well. I mean, both Target and Ulta are doing that very well. I think DoorDash is doing a great job in highlighting, especially during the pandemic, where so many African-American businesses and Latinx businesses and Asian businesses were really hurt, restaurants really hurting during COVID. So really serving up and highlighting very specifically, not just in their apps, but on, you know, in their advertising, these businesses that really gave them some momentum to get through COVID and brought so much attention to them that their businesses were able to survive, you know, the pandemic. So these are companies that I think are really using their, it's really interesting to me because it is the win-win. They are solution builders, not problem solvers. They are really identifying, you know, I like to say, you don't use a GPS to find out how you got lost. You use a GPS to figure out where you want to go, right? And, you know, these are companies that said, we understand where we want to go. We still want to make money. We're capitalists. We want to make money, but we can make money and help others who have not had the opportunities. We can help them make money as well. And that will help us grow the business. That helps us bring more people to the table. And when we bring more people to the table, it's not a zero-sum game, right? It's not like somebody has to give up their seat to make way for somebody else. You bring people to the table, you grow the table. And more people have more, they're just more seats. And that's one of the things we have to get, we really have to get out of our heads. This idea that it's always a zero-sum game, that you sacrifice talent for diversity, or that if I allow somebody to the table, then I lose my seat. The more, you know, Stanley Tucci said something interesting in his show on CNN. He said, you know, I'll paraphrase. He said, the richer, the more ingredients, the richer the stew. And we've got to start thinking that way, especially in the creative industries where we need more ideas, not less, more conversations, not less. And that's the way we're going to be competitive in a multicultural, transcultural, and global world. Because if you look at Western Europe, they're getting it. They're understanding that. And we need to as well, if we're going to continue to drive our GDP, our standard of living, and our economy.
Amen. Well, you had me at all of the smile, at the way of thinking different, but the Stanley Tucci reference really pushed me over the top. Big fan of Searching for Italy. Lauren, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so please just visit our website. We're always updating it. It is letsdowhatmatters.com. We're particularly fond of our cleverness there. But it is letsdowhatmatters.com because that's what we want people to do, is to do what matters. And we have a resource page that we, you know, all we ask is for a couple of pieces of information, but there's a resource page that we consistently update because we got tired of hearing, well, we can't find people. We don't know where to find them. So we have some recruiters that really do a great job at inclusion management hiring. We have job boards where you can find people of color. But we also have other resources where you can learn more about inclusion management. And we consistently update it. Once you do give us your information, you just bookmark it. And we are always updating it because we don't want a lack of information to be a barrier to success.
Well, that's great. Well, we will link up to that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Lauren, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Nick.
On Brand is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. If you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.